Let's do questions, if you have any questions. If not, we'll just keep going with broomsticks and stuff. Loud, okay?
My question is about meditation.
Okay.
For many years, I've had problems with trying to, like, let's say I'm picturing me and my mama in meditation, and I actually feel like I'm outside of my body watching. And I know it's me, but it's easier for me to watch the scene, like a movie, versus getting my mind inside the me as somewhere watching with my mama. And I've tried for years, and I don't know if that's, I think it's wrong, but.
So Summer has, when she tries to meditate on her lama, she tends to see herself as up behind the scene and watching herself in front of her lama rather than being herself in front of her lama. I don't think it's a problem. I think it's okay. Honestly, I think it's okay. I don't think it's a problem. If it makes you feel better, you could think that you are the Mahamudra watching your mind. You know what I mean? Because I think that's very healthy practice when you're trying to meditate, that you take a little piece of your mind and you step back with a piece of your mind and you watch your mind meditating. And that's standard practice. So I don't see it's much different than that.
And that same inside, if you're working inside and whatnot, too?
Say again?
If you're working on meditation inside?
Yeah, I don't see a problem. Yeah, I think it's okay. A lot of times you have to do what's more natural for you. Meditation is a very personal thing, like yoga. You know, when I first started yoga, I thought everybody should do Ashtanga, and then I stopped doing Ashtanga. You know, I mean, everyone's different, and I think you have to experiment with different approaches to meditation and the time that you meditate and what kind of seat you use and which kinds of meditation are better for you. I think it's very personal. So, yes, ma'am.
So all of the examples that Guruji has given have been in relation to the nominal sangha. So
yeah.
I'm just wondering, is it possible to actually split ultimate sangha?
That's a good question. So Bonnie said, all the examples that we have so far of splitting the sangha are of splitting the apparent sangha, which is just monks or other people. And they haven't spoken about splitting up groups of Aryas or an Arya? An Arya? I guess disrespecting or speaking, what do you call it? Dissing a single Arya would be a schism in the Sangha. Disrespecting the Sangha, something. Worse than disrespecting. Denigrating, or whatever. No, they don't say, but there are in other scriptures, in the Abhidharma, they talk about the karma of doing anything to an Arya, right? Negative or positive. So, and those are really, really serious. But he doesn't talk about them here. So, they talk about it in the Abhidharma. That's one of the reasons why Aryas aren't supposed to make announcements that they're Aryas, except to their own close students or something like that, because people wouldn't believe it, and they would disrespect it, and they would say something like, who are you to say that? You know what I mean? And then they would collect really bad karma. So normally, it's been traditional throughout the history of Buddhism that people who've seen emptiness directly don't talk about it much. Because if someone expressed, what do you call it, disbelief of them, then that person would make really bad karma. Okay. Yeah. Yes, Jeff?
Crisis of faith, as opposed to running away from that and saying, I want to be a part of it because I don't want to break this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. Jeff is saying, let's say you know someone who's having a doubt about the path, or who's in a disagreement with someone, who's two people having a disagreement in the path, and is it always the case that you simply avoid them, both or the one person, so because you don't want to get involved with the karma of splitting up the sangha? You don't want to be on either side? Or is there a time and a place when it would be appropriate to sit down and talk to them and try to help them out of it? I think there is a time and place to try to sit down and help talk them out of it. And I think it would be kind to do so. When you reach I think there's a turning point where fulcrum? The thing turns, where they start to get argumentative or defensive, or they start arguing or attacking. Then I think you draw back and you avoid them, you know. But as long as it's as far as it is peaceful and they're open and they want to listen and you can try to reason with them, then I think that's better. And you shouldn't it's easy to just avoid everyone who's having a doubt, right? But that's not the kindest thing to do. I think it is kinder to watch for an appropriate time when they might be open to talking about it, and they might be able to help them work out their doubts, would be the kindest thing. But then I think you have to be super sensitive to the point where they're not going to change, or they're going to keep having doubts forever. There's people like that too, just drive you crazy, you know. Like, you talk to them and they get in a pretty good place, and then a week later it's the same thing again. And then if it gets to be where they would disrespect the teachings, then you back off. Or what they would start arguing like that, then you back off. Yes. Lau.
Okay, I want to talk about the subject we talked about it, I think yesterday, about the debit card.
Yeah, okay.
About increasing and decreasing the credit.
Yeah, good. Yeah, good. Okay, let's talk about that. Ronit, right?
Yeah.
So Ronit's question is this. Yesterday we were talking about we had a Chinese teacher, came from China, and he came to Diamond Mountain, and we asked him to teach, and he taught. And we wanted to be proper, so we offered lots of gifts to him before, and then he was kind of upset, and he said, "You guys just ruined so much of my good karma, you know. You guys just used up so much of my good karma." And he was very serious, and we felt bad, you know. And Ronit is saying, for example, if I meet a poor person, and I give them some financial help, I will collect more good seeds, and I will have more financial independence in the future. But by giving something to them, am I not using up their good karma? Okay, am I not helping them use up seeds? Right. But then she had a deeper question. So there are four ways that karma ripens, and we should talk about them. And I love them. And they're very important, earth-shaking implications, okay? The four ways that karma ripens. And we covered a lot during the DCI programs. You'd be amazed at how the people, normal people in the world, especially business people, are so intelligent. and they get all this stuff right away. And no, especially the business people. And then business people are not spiritual, not because they don't want to be spiritual, but because nothing they ever heard made sense. And when they hear something that makes sense, they're really happy. And then they say, I can be spiritual and a business person. You know what I mean? So anyway, here are the four. We have tried to find short names for them. So we call them the four flowers, meaning the four ways that karma opens, okay? In general, you should understand that just before you see emptiness directly, you will be able to see how your mind created the yelling boss. Okay? It's not a theory thing. It's not like you say, oh, the boss is yelling at me, I must have yelled last week. You see what I mean? That's logic. That's what Ningbo's teaching Wednesday. And that's an important Buddhist skill. I must have yelled at someone last week if the boss is yelling at me today. That's logic. But as you advance in your meditation and your practice, and when you get to the Jorlam Chucho, highest part of the second path, you will be able to observe a karmic seed ripening in your own mind. What does it feel like? I always give the example of a pot on the stove, right? So you will be looking at a pot on the stove, and the conditions are important, the context is important. You're making tea for your lama. Okay? That's part of the story that is important. Okay? You were making tea for your lama, and you're standing there waiting for the water to boil, and you're watching it so it's not going to boil. And then suddenly you realize that you're looking at a small, luminous image. I'm going to sneeze. Sorry. I'm not doing pranayama. Okay. You are watching your... Then you realize you are watching an image coming out of your own mind. So at some point in your practice, due to your good karma, you're able to observe how a seed opens in your own mind. And a seed opens, and an image comes out. Of course, it's mental, so it doesn't have a measurement, physical measurement. But it feels like about this big, okay? And it feels like it's in the back of your mind, okay? Kinesthetic misapperception. It's some dance thing. Misperception kinesthetically. It's, what's that kind of dance theory? I forget. It was popular like 50, 60 years ago. But anyway, it feels like your arm is straight, but it's like this. And in this case, it feels like it feels like the pot is in your head, and it's a little image like this big, and you can observe it come out of the seed, and that's how karma opens. Okay, it's very interesting, you see, and then you mistake that for an outside pot, all right, and you're always living like that. That picture is overlaid over some random jumble of silver and circular. Okay? And that's how you perceive everything. Why are we talking about that? It really bugs me. I'm trying to remember that Alexander technique. Yeah. Okay. Some kind of misperception of what your body looks like as you're dancing. You think it's straight, but it's not. It's like when people do Vera too, and they're like this, you know. Here are four ways in which those seeds open. Okay, here are the four ways in which they open. It's a very beautiful teaching, and it's very helpful for intelligent people who are really curious about seeds, like business people. And they could be in China, and they don't care about Buddhism, and they just are. They like the theory, and it sounds cool to them. And they're like, tell me, how does it open exactly? And you say, okay, number one. it opens as an as a similar experience in the near future, okay, meaning in this lifetime. So I prefer to give positive examples. The scripture is always negative. If you lie, people will lie to you. You know what I mean? Someone will lie to you. I prefer to say, if you are generous, then money will come to you. By somehow, the money will come back to you. Okay? If you are generous, money will come back to you. That's the first one. It's called Gituma, I think. Second one is these are very, very profound, and you can spend many days meditating on this. The second one is the habit of doing that thing. Okay? So being generous is difficult. You know, I always think, I think of my mom. I think of lying to your mom. Okay? So we don't lie to our mothers until we are teenagers. I mean, mostly. And then they're like, where were you last night? You know, and then you don't want to get grounded. You were out with your girlfriend, you know, and you say, Mom, the tire. And she's like, you're such a lousy liar, you know. Like, you're lying, aren't you? And you're like, yeah, I'm lying. You're not even smart enough to tell her you're not lying. And then, and then the second, third, fourth time, it gets easier and you get smoother. You know, where were you last? Oh, come on, Mom, you know I would never come home late. You know, but why? Come on, I mean, look at the tire, you know. And then the night before, you messed up the tire somehow. And you're like, look at the tire, you know. It's all messed up. You learn to lie. You get the habit of lying, okay? So number two, karma flowering number two, is that every time you do something, you get better at it. And you get a habit of doing it, positive or negative. In the example of financial independence, right? It's unnatural when you are broke to give away money. It's totally unnatural. It's the last thing you would want to do. You always tighten up when you're having financial problems. You tighten up, right? Then somebody, you go to a long, long course, and someone talks you into believing that money comes from generosity. And then the first time you do it, it's hard. You know, I'm broke. I got $60 left to my name. If you count all the credit cards in the bank, I'm like 60, plus 60 or minus 60, you know? And so they say to make more, if I want to become financially independent, I have to share what I have. So I will give 20, I will give 30. Okay, you're like this, you know? You know, you give 20 and you're like, damn, I hope that wasn't like a crazy Buddhist idea, you know? The first time it's really hard. And then some windfall comes, you know, somebody pays you back a loan it happened to me the other day. Somebody came up and said, you're going to Singapore, right? And they said, yeah. And they said, here's the $800 that you asked me to change last year and I forgot, from Singapore money. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's cool. You know, so like that, just something will come. Something you don't expect will come. So the second way that a karma, by the way, try to keep in mind that we're talking about one karmic seed ripening four ways. It's ripening four ways. One seed will ripen in four ways, simultaneously in a way, okay? That's really cool to remember, okay? One seed will ripen in four ways. So the first way is that you will get back whatever you did pretty soon. Number two is, you will start to develop a habit. A habit is not a psychological thing. It's more seeds splitting in the subconscious, multiplying in the subconscious. And you gain a habit of the thing. The first time you give someone money because you're broke, it's hard. The second time is easier. The third time it becomes natural. Okay? It's unnatural now. Okay, flower number three. We could call environmental flowering, okay? Your world and the people around you will change, okay? People will become more generous. around you. You will live in a world where everyone has enough to live on. If you are truly generous with knowledge, with training, then the country you live in will change. The economy will change. People will have more money. People will be better off, you know, and it will change. I don't know, in my lifetime I've seen India, for example. When I first went to India, I saw a man eating grass. He was on his hands and knees and he was eating grass because he had nothing else to eat. And now India's doing pretty well, you know. So in my lifetime I've seen that happen, you know. There wasn't enough food in India. Now there's enough. Something has happened with the grain and the land, and there's enough. Things can change. So that's the environmental result, which is your answer, but we didn't get to it yet. Then flower number four. Here's a cool way to teach flower number four, and you should learn it. If you're a Buddhist and you want to help other people, you should learn to teach it this way. So listen up, okay? The fourth way that a karmic seed opens is as follows. When you do something, you are collecting seeds at the rate of 65 per second. I am talking to you about seeds. I just collected 650 seeds. Okay, like that. I have 650 seeds. They ripen at the same rate. They can only come out of the mind at 65 a second. Okay. Then me and Ningbo have this big argument going on. I say a really good film. We compromised, okay? What's the, or Osiris would know, what's the frames per second of a really good film? Good quality.
24 is the
standard.
Per second.
Is there anything higher? Does anybody make something higher? They don't have to. There's no reason to. Okay.
That's how it looked. Like in the old days, the film went like 16, so that way you see it faster.
Yeah.
And then they built better motors.
So yeah. So 24 is enough to fool the eye. 65 is really, really good. Then Ningbo says, Geshe-la, you shouldn't go around telling people 65 is what video is because it's only 24. Then, but we compromised because you have to get in the taste, the sounds, the tactile sensations, the thoughts. So 65 is okay.
It's like slow motion.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are having. Frames are coming up. Look at my arm, okay? Watch my arm. Okay? It looks like my arm went down, but really it's this. And your mind is throwing forth 65 arms. In different positions, in a flow. So it looks like the world is moving, but it's not. It's all like a film. It's all like frames. Your mind is making still pictures one by one. And they're so fast that it looks like you're moving, okay? So when you do something, you make 65 a second. When you experience something, you're using up 65 a second. But every 24 hours, an unused seed in your mind doubles. Every 24 hours. Forever. Okay? If you did something when you were six to your brother, like call him pig for most of his life, then you've got millions of seeds. I think Ningbo worked it out. It's a million a month or something. Am I wrong? In 2 months? 2 million a month, okay? If you do something on the first of the month and it doesn't ripen, it will be 2 million by the end of the month. Okay? The power will be 2 million. So it doesn't take a great mathematician like Pavel, who has a formula named after him. He's a PhD, he's a very famous mathematician, to figure out that you're going to have excess seeds after a while, because you can't use them up as fast as they multiply. So you, when you reach the end of your life, there are many more seeds than when you were born. You have many more seeds. You have millions upon millions of extra seeds. The third law of karma says that no seed can be wasted. No seed ever is wasted. All seeds must ripen. Okay? They must ripen. If you come to the end of your life, this physical body, and you have millions of extra seeds, they must ripen. They never disappear. They never go away. Okay? The mind can, the body can die, but nothing can kill the seed. And they will ripen. They will open. The body dies. And the seeds that are left over, they start to open one by one. And they cause a new mind to see a new world. Okay? And so don't think of rebirth as anything else. I don't think that talking about rebirth is ever useful in a non-Buddhist audience. It's probably not even useful in a Buddhist audience. But if you can get people logically to this point of understanding that when the body falls apart, you still have millions of seeds left, and they must open, and they will open, and they will create a new mind, and they will create something for that mind to see. And that's a new world, and you will go to a new world. What will that new world be like is determined by the karmic habits in this life. If you were generous consistently in this life, the fourth way in which karma opens is that you will come in, you will walk into a world which your mind is throwing in front of you, which is extremely, affluent. You will walk into an affluent country or an affluent world. Your mind will throw that ahead of you because you've been generous. That's the fourth result of karma. So those are the four. Number one, in this life you will get back what you did. Number two, you will create a habit. In the case of generosity, get something, okay? Understand something. This is extremely important. In the case of generosity, flower number two is extremely important. Why? Because you are picking up two habits when you give the money. What are they? One is the habit of giving money. Okay? The second one is the understanding what the hell you're doing. You see what I mean? Okay? And that's more important. It's good to learn to give money when you're broke. But what's more important is you're getting into the habit of giving what you need. Giving other people what you need. And that's more profound. Because then you'll go to, when you want a boyfriend, you'll go to the nursing home. When you have a bad back, you'll teach a yoga class. You see what I mean? You're breaking your old habit of thinking that you take to get. And you're creating a new habit that says you give to get. And that's under the other habit. Okay? So that's more profound. It's very beautiful. You can overcome billions of years of conditioning because of the second way that karma ripens. Okay? Just start. Try. Okay, you know what I mean? And it will break. The habit will break. So anyway, then the third one is that your environment changes. That's where Ronit questions comes in. If I'm generous to people, isn't one of the karmic results that I will see fewer poor people in my life? So how can you say I'm using up their debit card? She's a big debater. She's got me in a corner, you know. Like, how can you accuse me of using up their debit card? I'm making them more generous. They're going to be, the people around me are all going to be more wealthy if I'm generous, because flower number three says that. Got it? Huh. Now I have to answer it. The answer is pretty obvious. Anybody want to take a shot? It's the pen, actually. Anybody want to try?
From your side.
I will see them as more prosperous. They will see themselves as their debit card dropping.
Do they have to?
Excuse me?
They don't have to, no.
If their intention in taking the help from you is to turn around and help somebody else, they are, by taking it, they are making more credit. Okay. All right? Got it? Whew. All right. How are we? I don't want to be late. I want to go to Elisa Montes' class. It sounds really sexy to me about dance as an offering, and so I'm going to stop on time. Maybe one or two more questions. Yes, please, go ahead. Oh, yeah, because the fourth one is extremely important if you're a teacher, if you're teaching other people, right? You can grab them by the collar and say, you have to believe in future lives, you know, and it doesn't seem to work. Or you can say, you know, they say, somebody asked Lord Buddha, how many seeds do you collect in an instant? Muhurta. In the old days, they didn't have clocks. So Buddha said, let's take the example of a finger snap, which was one of the smallest units of time for normal people in his time. So he said, let's take in a finger snap, you are collecting 65 seeds. If you smile at somebody for that long, you get 65 smiles back. It's a good deal. Then they double every 24 hours. Prabhupada Kripache is going to say it in here. He's going to use the example of crushing an insect which is biting you. And it doubles. The karma doubles within 24. Every 24 hours, the karma doubles. You only use up seeds at 65. It only takes 65 frames a second to have super good multisensory. Okay, Ningbo? Playback. Multisensory playback only takes 65 frames a second. You will never use up all the seeds you have. You will always have an excess, okay? Then you come to the end of your life. And the body breaks. The body breaks down. But the seeds are there. And the third law of karma, there's four laws of karma, right? The third law of karma says a seed cannot be destroyed. It's not possible. No seed is ever destroyed. Every seed will have its consequence. Nothing you ever said or spoke or thought will ever be lost. All things are recorded, and all things are paid back. Nothing is not paid back. No one can cut you slack. You can't go into some big guy and say, you know, can we just like cancel those things I did when I was a teenager? And they say, no. You know, you experience them. You can use the four powers, and you can minimize what happens. So anyway, I think it's a really beautiful way. You get somebody to the idea. In this context, it's very, very helpful to give the example of when you turn the page of a book, the words are not coming from the book to your eyes. They are coming from your mind to the paper. Okay? When you turn when you read a line of a book, your mind is throwing down word by word on a blank piece of paper. Okay? When you go to see a movie, you know, and the guy's about to kiss the girl and you're like, go for it, you know, and then they're like, and then, you know, whether they get interrupted and never kiss, or whether they kiss in the next 30 seconds, that's coming from you. Okay? That's coming from you. Your mind is throwing the movie ahead of you. You see what I mean? It's like you have a pile of flagstones and you are put one down, you're holding all these flagstones and you put one down and you step on it. And then you put down the next one and you step on it. Okay, Ken Rinpoche, slave work number 93. He walks out the front porch. He looks across at the new driveway that I laid, asphalt, at the new garage that I built, and he's like, how do I get to it? I have to walk across the lawn, you know? And I'm like, yeah, you have to walk across the lawn. Oh, we need flagstones, you know? So then I have to go buy flagstones, you know? Then we set them down from the house to the garage. And we work hard, we set them all down. And he's like, I like them, those are good, yeah, those are nice. Then he just steps out on the first one and it goes like this. And he says, take them all up. Take them all up. They need sand under them, you know? So this is life with Rinpoche. Then we put sand under every single one and we even it out, you know, and it's okay. And it's like getting dark, you know, by now. And he's like, he steps out on the first one. He says, "That's great, Mike. It doesn't wobble." I'm like, "Yeah, okay, let's have dinner." He's like, "You know, it's too high. When we mow the lawnmower will hit the flagstones, you know. We have to lower it. Take them all up again. You know, dig it down. Buy some more sand. Put more sand. It should be lower. Otherwise the lawnmower will hit it, you know." And then I'm like, the next day I'm like out there in the sun and I'm like, why the hell, you know, what? Why is he making me do this over and over again? You know, put it down, step on it. Put down the next one, step on it. Over and over and over. And like the third day I'm like, aha, he's trying to teach me. That's the magic that takes place between, if you really believe your Lama is enlightened, whether he is or not, you will have these breakthroughs. And it's worth it, you know, to suffer for 3 days. You know, so I'll never forget, you know, you are throwing down the next moment of your reality, and then you're walking into it. You see what I mean? You didn't walk into this room. You threw down the next yard of the room and then you stepped into it. When we walked across the room in Elisa Monte's dance class, over and over, you were throwing down the next 3 feet and then you were stepping into it. Your mind laid down the next 3 feet of the carpet and then you stepped onto it, right? And that's what happens when you die. The same thing happens when you die. You have millions of seeds left over. The last act of this mind is to throw down the next one. And then you step into it. And you're in a new world. And I don't like to call it a new birth. Somehow it seems like the birth was there. They're making dog bodies in a factory in Kansas. Spirits are caught, grabbed by a cosmic force and stuffed into dog bodies. It's not like that. You are throwing the next world in front of you. And then you step into it and you forget where you were. Okay? Because you're a different person. You're another person. It's very interesting. Why am I talking about that? It's a much more compelling way to teach future lives to a group of Chinese businessmen in Beijing next week. And they buy it, you know, if you sneak it up on them. You say, "Are there 65? Yes. Do you use up 65? Yes. Do they double every day? Yes. Do you have extra left over when you die? Yes. Does it throw force in another world?" They're like, "I guess so." And then you got them. Then you can talk to them about what's the quality of that world going to be. What's, you know, let's talk about the quality of the next world. And then you're talking next world already to the Communist Party of Beijing. Okay. But it's a good way to do it. And it's much more logical, right? It's more compelling in the context of the four ways that it flowers, the karma flowers. Okay, maybe last question. Yeah.
In the book, How Yoga Works.
I hate it when they quote my own books to me.
The head cop.
Yeah, the captain.
Right, the captain. Did she teach him how to?
In the book, she teaches him.
How to get rid of seeds.
Yeah. Okay.
What's the difference?
Yeah, this is something I've been working on. I mean, when I teach, if you give a really good weekend seminar in Kiev, right, and there's just a bunch of new businessmen there, by the third day, they are talking seeds. Everything that comes out of their mouth is seeds. We were in Vietnam. On the third day, they're all going, and hundreds of people are sitting. I don't know what the heck they're saying, but I said, when they hit their head, what are they saying? They said seed. Every time you see someone hit their head, they're saying seed, you know? By the third day, they're all talking about seeds. Everybody gets it. Everybody in the world. Then everybody in the world comes and says, "Wait a minute, how do I get rid of my old bad seeds?" They get it. The minute you get the thing about good seeds, the next thought in your head is, "Yes, but when I was 16, oh boy, Can you like cancel old scenes, you know? And like that's the first thing people say. And then we all, on the last day, we always teach the four powers. And we say, you can destroy the scene. Or you can deactivate it. So there are three ways to describe what happens with the four powers. You can say the seed is destroyed or taken out. You can say the seed is still there, but its power to give a result is stripped away from it. It's deactivated. Nowadays, I have a bird food that I give my birds. It's called Niger seed. The yellow finches are addicted to it. They're like meth junkies. You know, you put out Niger seed and you'll have 50 bright little happy yellow birds around all the time. And they can't stop it. They eat it all day long. And it's a thistle that grows in India. And they don't want it in this country. They don't want it growing in this country. So they radiate it. All the seeds are radiated before they go to customs. All the packages, thousands of tons of Niger seed are radiated, and they don't grow. The seed is there, its nutrition is still there, its genetic qualities are destroyed. So you can say, are you taking out a seed? Or is the seed still there and it cannot grow? Or is it there and you trigger a process by which it grows quickly and in a very minor way? And technically, I think you have to say the third. When you're teaching people, it's probably easier at the beginning to say, let's get rid of the seed you made when you were 16, rather than give them the Niger seed story. You know what I mean? So it's probably better to, I think when you're teaching, you sell it as a way to destroy your seeds. When they've been around for a while, you say, actually you're not destroying them, you're disabling them. When they've been around for a really long time, you tell them, what the Buddha said in the Diamond Cutter Sutra, which is that you're actually just triggering them to explode prematurely. They open too early. And it's just a little wimpy. The Buddha in the Diamond Cutter Sutra says, if you collected the karma to die from cancer and you use the four powers, that seed will open the next day or shortly afterwards as a migraine. Headache. Okay, that's so technically that's what's happening. But when you teach it, you shift to the level of the audience. Right? They want to hear that it's gone. So it's not really gone. It does open, but like a zillionth of the percent of what it would have been. Okay, like that. Hechu. Hepu. God bless. Let's stop there, okay? Then we have some extra rest time before Elisa's talk, okay? Okay, thanks. Thanks for coming to this retreat, and thanks for asking. You know, you are the hardcore people, and it's a pleasure to be with you. Okay, so thank you. To somebody asking good questions, okay?